there's no such thing as being too Jewish.
Thank you very much.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, Rabbi's guest is Sarika Talve Goodman and Hannah Tinty, co-editors of the late Adina Talve Goodman's book, Your Hearts, Your Scars. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's midsummer now, which also means tomorrow is Bastille Day, July 14th, National Independence Day for France. And wouldn't it be nice to vacation in France right now? So close your eyes, unless you're driving a car, and think for a moment about France, the Champs-Élysées, the Arc de Triomphe, the bridges over the Seine, the Eiffel Tower, wine, cheese, croissant with jam and coffee, great food, great art, lovely countryside, bicycle riders, the tricolor flag, beautiful cities, and rude people who actually eat snails. You know, France, far from the heat of a western desert summer, just in time for Bastille Day. And so you ask, Rabbi, just what possible Jewish meaning can France have? Ah, I say. You may not know this, but the first nation in the Old World to guarantee full citizenship to Jews was Revolutionary France. And without the French Revolution of 1789, Jewish history in Europe would have been very different and even darker. We are very grateful to our own country of America, whose 4th of July we celebrated recently, but we should retain respect for the country that created the first Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and which benefited our Jewish people in particular. By the way, when it was approved by the French legislature, I guess, it was Sephardic Jews who received full French citizenship first in 1790, followed by Ashkenazi Jews in 1791. My favorite weird historical question most people get wrong is this. Who broke down the walls of the ghettos in Europe, the walls that had existed confining our people since the 1500s? That is, who really emancipated the Jews of Western Europe? The answer? Napoleon Bonaparte. You see, when Napoleon was conquering Europe in the 1790s and early 1800s, his armies were fighting, at least in theory, for liberty, equality, and fraternity. He had no love for religion in general, certainly not for the Ancien Régime, the old order of the Catholic Church, that had enforced so many terrible rules and constraints on Jews throughout the Middle Ages and Renaissance into early modern times. And while Napoleon had no particular regard one way or the other for Jews, he was a non-commissioned officer from the island of Corsica with little exposure to Jews, really. He had a very strong sense of the necessity to break down the old bad order. As he is quoted as saying, to the Jews as a commune, that is, as a people, nothing. To the Jew as an individual citizen of France, all rights and privileges. Which was a very great change and a great gift at that time in world history. As the French armies crossed Europe, conquering, plundering, and establishing their own governments everywhere, they also, almost as an afterthought, broke down the walls of every ghetto they encountered and let the Jews out, including the oldest of them in Venice. They established, for at least a while, a new legal system, the Code Napoleon, which allowed Jews to go to university for the first time, to serve in the military, to be part of the civil service, to become doctors and lawyers, live wherever they wanted, live as full citizens. It was an extraordinarily important moment in Jewish history. France enabled us to enter the modern world, at least wherever its armies had control, and the ghetto walls were not established again in the same way or with quite the same force until, well, Adolf Hitler. That meant that we Jews suddenly could experience everything the modern world had to offer. It made possible the extraordinary successes and accomplishments and experiences of modernity and Judaism. It was while Napoleon controlled Germany that Reform Judaism was born, an Enlightenment version of Jewish belief and practice that catalyzed all modern Judaism, either inspired by it or reacting against it. In the long run, it was Napoleon who made possible Zionism and the State of Israel. Emancipation was earth-shaking. And it was all because of France, which still has one of the largest Jewish populations in the world. Now, mind you, today, anti-Semitism in France is real and dangerous. Much of it is the result of the virulent and violent anti-Semitism of Arab immigrant underclasses from France's former North African colonies. Some of it is from the rising right-wing nationalism of the party founded by the neo-fascist Le Pens. Still, we do well to remember in this challenging time that it was France that first gave Jews the full rights of citizenship, emancipating us 235 years ago. And so to play us in this morning, here's a French-Jewish song, Shmile, that is Shmuel, for Bastille Day tomorrow.
Shmile, tes vêtements n'ont pas de style. T'es pas un tailleur habile. Regarde la fille du voisin. Comme déjà il coupe bien. Ses pantalons, ses gilets, ses vestons. Quel bonheur pour les parents d'avoir au monde un tel enfant. Ta jambe gauche, elle est trop longue. Ta jambe droite, n'en parlons pas. Tu seras toujours quelconque si tu ne m'écoutes pas. Schmile, tes vêtements n'ont pas de style. T'es pas un tailleur habile. Et je suis désespéré devant ton incapacité.
That was the French-Jewish ballad, Shmile. Our guests this morning on Too Jewish are Sarika Talvey-Goodman and Hannah Tinti, co-editors of the late Adina Talvey-Goodman's book, Your Hearts, Your Scars, written before her early tragic death. It's a remarkable story, a remarkable story of composition, too. Hear it when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guests this morning, Sarika Talvey-Goodman and Hannah Tinti. They are the, I guess you'd say co-editors, it might be the best way to put it, of the book Your Hearts, Your Scars by Adina Talvey-Goodman, which is a beautiful little book about a very important person who is gone. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
So tell us about Adina a little bit.
Wow.
Sorry. Nice open-ended question there.
When you love someone so much, it's always hard to know where to begin. But maybe, Sarika, you want to start, and then I'll chat a little about...
Yeah. So I'm Adina's sister. She was 2 years younger than me and was born with one ventricle, single ventricle part, and some other congenital...
congenital heart defect that couldn't last, obviously.
So she had a transplant at 19, and then at, I don't know, 10 years later, she diagnosed with a rare form of lymphoma.
So the transplant, in a way, caused the lymphoma down the road.
Correct. And her heart was perfect, had no problems, no rejection. And the lymphoma was very fast progressing, so we lost her 6 months after she was diagnosed. So she had decided to work on her own book. So she didn't get very far. So that was kind of left to me in some way, or that's what I felt when she died, is that, you know, I gathered everything together. And so Hannah, being such an experienced writer and editor, I really trusted her, and Adina really trusted her and loved her. And so we worked together. Adina was just amazing to work with. And, you know, she cared about every word. Our expressions of love
you know? Mm-hmm. And I do that the reaction that we've received from having this book out in the world from so many people who either had a similar experience in terms of being a transplant patient like Adina, but anyone really who has either had a loved one go through a, you know, a long time, you know, health condition, you know, Adina had a way of looking at the world with so much compassion, and also, you know, joy. Yeah. That I think that this, and humor, you know, just, you know, we really say, you know, this is really a book about life, you know, it's a book about loss and chance and, you know, mainly gratitude, you know, which is sort of how she made her way through the world. And so anyone who met Adina, you know, understood that. And it's been really moving to see how her words have touched people who never even met her, you know, because it is, it's these, you know, small sort of slices of her life.
Yeah. I mean, it's extraordinary. We will talk much more with our guests, Sarika Talvey Goodman and Hannah Tinti, about the book, Your Hearts, Your Scars, and about Adina Talvey Goodman. We come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer. Established nearly 7 years ago by terrific congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the Catalina foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the Tucson metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary. Call 520-276-5675. Coming up today at 2 p.m., a really fun event. Watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, find out what's biblical fact or Hollywood film fiction. There'll be a trivia contest, a lot of fun. It'll be at the Unscrewed Theater at 2 p.m. today on Speedway. You can go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, to sign up. Religious School is registering now for school-aged children and grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew School, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience for the youngest kids and parents, confirmation, teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night, services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Onig Shabbat with homemade challah. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. with services at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page has our services too, Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom. You can access our extensive array of adult education, including Hebrew and Introductory Judaism. Email rabbi at BeitSimchaTucson.org or just go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the most dynamic and fastest-growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, Kvetch Orkvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, Jewish Radio 18 at Gmail, or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating. Review Two Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We are pleased this morning to introduce a new segment for your Two Jewish radio show and podcast enjoyment this week as we approach our 23rd anniversary of Two Jewish. No kidding, we've been on the air since August 2002, for heaven's sake. We thought it'd be worthwhile to highlight something happening in our world that you might not have noticed, which demonstrates a sea change in how things are working for Jews, and we call it...
Changes! Changes. Don't want to be a richer man.
Last week, the National Education Association, largest organization of teachers in the U.S. and maybe the world, voted in a non-binding resolution against using any materials prepared by the ADL, the Venerable Anti-Defamation League, which, among other things, produces excellent curricula on the Holocaust and anti-Semitism, accurate statistics on anti-Semitism and bigotry more broadly. It also has valuable student curricula and teacher training on tolerance and acceptance of minorities. This anti-ADL proposal was supported by a slim majority of NEA delegates present at the union's 2025 Representative Assembly in Portland. It will automatically be referred to its executive committee, which has final say on the measure. It calls for the union to stop using ADL materials about the Holocaust and anti-Semitism, as well as all ADL statistics or programs. Now, the practical impact, if it is ultimately approved, isn't clear. Unions don't typically decide on programming or curriculum in schools. But the success of this measure, nonetheless, offers evidence that the hashtag Drop the ADL from Schools movement, which argues the organization promotes pro-Israel bias in its material for schools, achieved a kind of breakthrough success as it tries to demonize an important Jewish institution, the ADL. Of course, the ADL condemned the vote, with anti-Semitism at record high levels. It's profoundly disturbing that a group of NEA activists brazenly attempted to further isolate their Jewish colleagues and push a radical anti-Semitic agenda on students, the spokesperson said. We will not be cowed for supporting Israel. We will not be deterred from our work reaching millions of students with educational programs every year. In 2024, the ADL provided 5 million Jewish and non-Jewish students with educational materials and programs, including content on anti-Semitism, the Holocaust, and Jewish identity. The ADL, long seen across the U.S. political spectrum as the arbiter of what constitutes anti-Semitism in America, has become a target of criticism for progressives over its defense of Israel and its support of the accurate idea that anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. The political fallout from Israel's war against Hamas has accelerated that shift, apparently. The ADL is also, by the way, frequently maligned by the far right. Well, if the progressives hate you and the far right hates you, you must be doing something right. Look, as we have often said on Too Jewish, why is it that only we Jews are not permitted to have our own nation on this planet? Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, just dressed up in a keffiyeh. This is not the last effort to demonize an important Jewish group, nor is it the first. But it's a dark sign indeed when the ADL is in the crosshairs of an important teachers' union. That was our new Too Jewish segment, Changes.
אז יבואו כבר כולם אמרו את זה קודם לפני לא משנה אני ואתה נשנה את העולם.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, Iran has been, of course, very much in the news. I think it's valuable for our two Jewish listeners to begin to understand or to remind themselves of the fact that there are major divisions in the Muslim world between Shia and Sunni, that Iran is predominantly Shia and the Arab countries around it are Sunni, that Iran is not Arab, but Persian, and that so that there's ethnic differences, although, of course, all of those countries are a little bit of a mixture ethnically. Maybe you can help us get a clearer idea of what's going on there and how long it's been going on.
Sure thing. So historically, there have been essentially three rival centers for power in the Islamic world. The Arabs on one hand, the Persians on another, and the Turkic peoples on another. And I want to be very clear that Turkic peoples does not apply only to Turkey, but to most of the countries in Central Asia and to northwestern China. The Xinjiang province is Turkic. Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, those are all countries with Turkic languages, Turkic cultures that were never all part of Turkey, but that was one rival for power and influence in the Islamic world. The oldest one from which the Prophet Muhammad and others are descended are the Arabs themselves, with the holy cities of Islam, Mecca and Medina, in the Arabian Peninsula, and which for many centuries had Egypt as its intellectual capital. And then there's the Persian world, which most Americans think is only Iran, but they're actually missing out on a good chunk of Afghanistan, and also Tajikistan, which all speak Persian-related tongues and have Persian customs like Nowruz as the New Year. That's unique to Persian-speaking countries, broadly speaking. And the kind of tools for wielding influence in this rivalry only became oil in the 20th century. Before the 20th century, it was universities, it was politics, it was empire building. The Turks, as the Ottomans built a huge empire and took over a third of Europe, they were an impressive, credible rival for power in the Islamic world with both the Arabs and the Persians. This imbalance has shifted throughout the centuries, and it's very interesting to study the Islamic world from that perspective. But then there's the other perspective that you raise, which is that within the Arab and Persian and Turkic communities, there's another very basic division between Shia and Sunni. And that division goes back to the earliest decades of Muslim history, when there was an argument over who was the legitimate successor of Muhammad. And it was like maybe the fourth or fifth generation where the people who supported somebody named Ali were called the Shiatul Ali, the party of Ali, the followers of Ali, supporters of Ali. They became the Shia, and everybody else was Sunni. And as you point out, the vast majority of the, not only the Arab-speaking world, but also the Turkic-speaking world are Sunni. And in the Persian-speaking world, the vast majority are Shiite. But there are communities of both all over the Islamic world, including India, which at one point in its history was like one-third Muslim. And routinely on important feast days in the Islamic calendar, the Shia and the Sunni would like burn down each other's quarters, their neighborhoods. There were open conflicts, like violent armed conflicts between Shia and Sunni in countries that were neither, in fact. So it's a basic and still hostile division that helps explain some of the underlying alliances and the statements of support or statements of criticism for the Iranian regime.
It's such a different picture than I think most Americans have, which is, oh, the Middle East, and as though we're all one thing except for Israel, and that's not at all accurate, but particularly the Iranian rivalry that it has for leadership in the Muslim world for so long and now. Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
Time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Little Izzy, a Polish Jewish immigrant to England, had never been on a train in his whole life. On a lovely sunny day, he decided he would take a train ride. Off he went with his yarmulke on his head, a kosher salami under one arm, black bread and a jar of pickled herring in the other, his tzitzis hanging down. Izzy sat down in a plush compartment and settled in to have his lunch. Suddenly a porter popped his head in and said, "Sir, you must leave this compartment immediately. It's reserved for the Archbishop of Canterbury." And Izzy replied, "Well, how do you know I'm not the Archbishop from Canterbury?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. In a world in which religious violence is the norm, how does Judaism think about this troubling issue? This week we read the portion from the book of Numbers in the Torah, named after a man called Pinchas, whose story began at the end of last week's portion of Balak. The situation is familiar. For the umpteenth time, the people of Israel have disobeyed the Torah and worshipped other gods. This time, the apostasy reaches epidemic proportion. Even the elite leadership of the people starts to sample the religious wares of the Midianites and Moabites. Finally, one of the princes of the people challenges the authority of Moses publicly. He takes a sacred prostitute into his tent. The whole assembly watches in horror. As Moses and the other elders stand by in shock, unable to respond to this chutzpahdik act, a young Kohen, a priest named Pinchas, steps forward. He kills the wayward prince and his consort with a spear, breaking the spell of the evil religious practice. For this act, the Torah tells us, he is rewarded by God, which seems to validate the violent vigilantism. But there is more to the story than meets the eye, for Pinchas' reward for killing the couple is a brit shalom, a covenant of peace. Neither he nor any of his descendants is ever again permitted to go to war or carry a spear. He must minister to the needs of the tabernacle, the rituals of the altar, purification, and sacrifice. He must never engage in any more acts of violence. Pinchas has broken the Israelites' latest fascination with paganism, but never again will his level of religious violence be tolerated. It must instead be sublimated to serve the needs of the community. This is an ongoing lesson about the dangers of religious fanaticism. Judaism has consistently refused to countenance the kind of religious insanity that led to the Crusades or Jihad or the Inquisition, public burnings, any kind of religious terrorism. In spite of the occasional anomaly, or even what's happening sometimes in the West Bank right now, our Jewish religious fervor is not designed to lead to violence. We must be committed, fervently and firmly, to the same Brit Shalom, the covenant of peace that God places on Pinchas. Religious passion and fervor are essential elements of a truly spiritual life. But religious violence is immoral, not Jewish. In Torah, it is expressly forbidden. We must always seek to channel our fiercest dedication to the service of peace. We pray that all religious traditions will come to see it this way too. And this week, we pray that our own Jews remember this essential lesson from this Torah portion of Pinchas as well. When we return in a moment, our guests, Sarika Talvey Goodman and Hannah Tinty, co-editors of the late Adina Talvey Goodman's book, Your Hearts, Your Scars, explain how they used her journals and their memories of their heart transplant sister and their close friend to create a beautiful little book as a tribute to her. Hear all about it when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu left the White House after 2 days of meetings with the Trump administration, but without the public appearances or breakthrough announcements of his previous trips to Washington. Instead, Netanyahu released multiple statements emphasizing his commitment to continue the Gaza war until Hamas poses no threat to Israel, a sign that he remains less eager than President Donald Trump to reach an agreement with Hamas over ending the war. Netanyahu also said he had spoken again with Trump about their great victory against Iran, one day after his office released footage of him presenting the president with a mezuzah in the shape of a B-2 bomber, like the ones that Trump dispatched to bomb Iranian nuclear sites last month. Israeli media reported that officials believe as much as 90% of the issues that separated Israel and Hamas over a ceasefire deal have been resolved. Steve Witkoff, whom Trump charged with negotiating peace, said he believed 90% of the gaps had been closed. A deal could come this coming week. But a plan for post-war governance, and whether Hamas will continue to play a role in any form in it, remains an obstacle. The deal being negotiated will allow for half of the 50 Israeli hostages in Gaza, of whom 20 are thought to be alive, that is, a living hostage exchange with some dead bodies. All of that is supposed to happen within 60 days. This is after hundreds of days of captivity. The deal would also require the two sides to continue negotiating towards a permanent conclusion of the war. President Trump is eager to achieve peace. He told his own cabinet last week, "We have to get this solved." But Netanyahu is facing pressure from his own coalition partners to continue the war, unwilling to leave Hamas in place in Gaza in any way. As he left Washington, Netanyahu released a statement alluding to the deaths of 5 more Israeli soldiers last week in Gaza, signaling he was not pulling back on the military campaign in Gaza. "We focused on the efforts to release our hostages. We are not relenting, even for a moment. This is made possible due to the military pressure by our heroic soldiers," he said. "Unfortunately, this effort has exacted a painful price. From us, the loss of the best of our sons, but we are determined to achieve all of our objectives." In other news in New York, Shai Davidai, the Israeli business school professor who emerged as one of the sharpest antagonists against Columbia University over its lack of response to anti-Semitism on campus, resigned from his job there. A university spokesman for Columbia confirmed Davidi's resignation. The university thanks him for his service and wishes him the best in his future endeavors, the school said. The resignation means Columbia has closed its own investigation into Davidi, whom it blocked from entering portions of the campus last year, alleging he repeatedly harassed and intimidated university employees in violation of university policy. Columbia University policy allows the Office of Institutional Equity to close investigations when a subject is not employed there any longer. Shai Davidi was one of the earliest and most vocal public critics of Columbia's lack of response to Hamas's October 7, 2023 brutal war crime attack on Israel. That month, he went viral, delivering a speech condemning the university for allowing pro-terror student demonstrations and telling parents their children on Ivy League campuses were not safe. I want you to know one thing. We cannot protect your child, he said, at an outdoor vigil less than 2 weeks after Hamas's terrorist attacks. I'm speaking to you as a dad. I want you to know we cannot protect your children from pro-terror student organizations because the president of Columbia University will not speak out against pro-terror student organizations. While Shai Davidi will no longer work at Columbia, the university continues to face pressure to make the kinds of changes that he sought. This month, the school entered its fourth month of negotiations with the Trump administration after the federal government canceled $400 million in grants to the school over its handling of campus anti-Semitism in March. Earlier this month, acting Columbia president Claire Shipman issued an apology after leaked text messages showed she had suggested removing a Jewish trustee. Last month, a report from Columbia found that nearly two-thirds of Jewish students at Columbia reported not feeling accepted for their religious identity during the 2023 school year. In other news, issues and questions were made public last week about Friends of the IDF, FIDF. It's an American charity that's raised hundreds of millions of dollars promising to meet the emergency needs of Israeli soldiers when the war in Gaza broke out. It is now facing internal turmoil over allegations of financial mismanagement, cronyism, and a toxic workplace culture. The crisis at Friends of the Israel Defense Forces centers on the group's chairman, Mori Levovitz, who is accused of consolidating power, awarding contracts to associates without oversight, authorizing lavish spending insiders say betrays donors' trust. The accusations were made public last week in an article published by Ynet, a major Israeli news outlet, citing a report from an internal investigation commissioned by FIDF's board earlier this year. Following the public coverage, the FIDF acknowledged the existence of the report, an 18-page document written by a team of two board members and a longtime attorney for the group, and said it is preparing a response. We were made aware of the allegations. FIDF immediately began an internal investigation, the group said. We take these matters extremely seriously. Our board and leadership team are actively evaluating and addressing the concerns raised and taking appropriate steps to respond swiftly and responsibly. The FIDF has hired a law firm and a public relations company to deal with the crisis. I guess that's just what you do, right? Our executive committee has already engaged a law firm specializing in not-for-profits to look into ways to reinforce our policies and procedures internally, reads an internal email, leaked. We also hired a public relations firm to help us navigate our communications with the situation for our donors, employees, and the media. Founded in 1981, headquartered in New York City, FIDF is a large Jewish charity raising funds to benefit Israeli soldiers. The group has 25 chapters across country, hundreds of employees and volunteers. Its fundraising events have drawn major celebrities, including retired boxer Mike Tyson, Hollywood star Ashton Kutcher, musical artist Pharrell Williams. The donor pool features some of the most prominent philanthropists in the country, the Adelson family, Home Depot founder, the late Bernie Marcus, Oracle founder Larry Ellison, entertainment mogul Chaim Saban, who sits on the group's board. The Friends of the IDF saw an unprecedented windfall after launching an emergency fundraising campaign in response to Hamas's October 7, 2023 war crime terrorist attacks on Israel. The total raised in 2023 was $280 million, according to Friends of the IDF's audited financial statements. That is almost triple the $100 million FIDF anticipated raising at the start of the year. Already one of the top fundraising organizations among American Jewish institutions, FIDF likely collected more money in support of Israel after October 7th than any other individual charity. The only campaign known to have raised more is the entire Jewish Federation system that raised $850 million across dozens of organizations representing 400 Jewish communities across North America. This extraordinary increase in donations to the FIDF reflected a widespread desire among American Jews to show support after the Israeli military lost hundreds of soldiers October 7th. Hundreds more casualties followed in subsequent fighting during the Gaza War. It has demanded an almost unprecedented mobilization of Israel's military reserves. And now, questions have arisen about just how they spend that money and how much of it, well, they simply have hoarded. And pro-Palestinian terrorist demonstrations in Melbourne, Australia, chanted death to the IDF at a rally last week, just a couple of days after a spate of violent attacks on Jewish targets, including a synagogue and businesses with ties to Israel. Local Australian police ramped up their presence at the rally after the attacks Erev Shabbat that included arson at a synagogue while more than 20 Jews were inside for a Shabbat dinner. Police arrested one man in connection with the arson. It resulted in damage to the East Melbourne synagogue building, but no injuries. In addition to the arson, second at a Melbourne synagogue in 7 months, a weapons business was vandalized with anti-Israel graffiti, and more than 20 people stormed an outpost of the Miznon chain, owned by Israeli chef Eyal Shani, some shouting death to the IDF in the process. That phrase has vaulted into prominence since the disgusting punk band Bob Vylan chanted it at the Glastonbury Festival in England a couple of weeks ago. Both Miznon and the business Lovett Technologies have been targets of Melbourne's robust pro-Palestinian terrorists movement because of their ties to the Israeli military and the war in Gaza. Australian Jews have been on high alert amid widespread anti-Semitic incidents and tensions ever since the start of the Israel-Hamas war October 7, 2023. Police in Melbourne evacuated a synagogue during Shabbat services in 2023, concerned that a nearby demonstration would spill over into violence. And Addis Israel, a synagogue in a Melbourne suburb, was set on fire last December amid a flurry of attacks on Jewish targets in Australia. Police believe some of those incidents were the work of criminal gangs. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guests this morning, Sarika Talveh Goodman and Hannah Tinti. They are the, I guess, co-editors, co-creators might be more accurate, of Your Hearts, Your Scars, a book by Adina Talveh Goodman, who had a heart transplant at a young age, died tragically of lymphoma about a decade later, but had, seems to have touched many people. I should note, she, as well as her sister Sarika, are the daughter of... She was, and her sister is the daughter of two rabbis. That's not the only reason you're on Two Jewish. There's a both a sweetness and a certain macabre feeling to the book. Sarika, just tell us a little bit. I mean, Adina lived with the possibility of death really so long, I mean, throughout her life. You know, she writes about feeling like a zombie sometimes. And then when she gets a cold after the heart transplant, she thinks she's going to die. And her mom says, your mom says, oh, you just got a normal person cold. You're okay. You know, things like that. How there's this constant challenge of living with the reality of death, which makes it the book I think seem very alive. Like she's really embracing life.
Yeah, that's a very lovely way to describe her writing, you know, it's like that quality of like aliveness and vibrancy just of, that comes through and yeah, how that comes very closely with her relationship to death and to the possibility of dying, her experience with dying, right? She writes about it as the crawl space between gratitude and grief. There's always a grief, right? And a sense of potential loss. And suffering that comes with chronic illness. So I don't know. That I think I see that as one of the biggest gifts of why I thought it was important, you know, even though I didn't know how Adina would feel necessarily about sharing work that wasn't totally finished, you know, totally perfect and exactly what she wanted. She was so meticulous as a writer, and careful. And, you know, I struggled with that. Would she want this? And I think ultimately, yes, you know, just because of who she is and who she was and how much she gave to people, just day to day, as Hannah said, just who, how much, like how she lived was so generous and so loving and so, intentional.
Yeah, I would love to add to that, that even though this is a posthumous book and, you know, some of these essays when Sirica first sort of discovered them and read through them were unfinished. Any editing that we did, we used sentences or words or phrases from previous drafts of Adina's writing. Mm-hmm. So every single word in every essay are all hers. And I do think I'd love to mention just about your mention of the macabre, you know, in this, think that that's one of the special things about the book is that, you know, Adina never really, like, she didn't look away from the hard things. You know, there's one of my favorite pieces is the condition of my transplanted heart is one of remembering, which starts off with a sort of description of Adina's mother took a picture of the surgeon who was carrying the cooler with Adina's heart.
Yeah.
And has this photograph, you know, and how, like, she would look at that photograph as, like, you know, a moment of joy, even though that's also a moment of loss for someone else, right? Mm-hmm. And so that sort of concrete description of that photograph, you know, is really meaningful because that's reality. And there is something about that I think adds so much to Adina's essays and makes them so special.
There's an intensity to it. I think I was particularly taken by the way that she describes wanting to have her original heart after the heart transplant. And the doctor saying, is that a Jewish thing? And her parents saying, your parent, the rabbi is saying, no, that's not a Jewish thing to take your organs home.
That was just an Adina thing.
Yeah. And then the whole, she is like, gets into the whole process. Like, I have a heart inside and then there's this heart outside. It's remarkable that she had the, I don't know if it's courage. I mean, that there's an intensity to it that I think is very unusual. I've read various books about heart transplants and so on. Know people who've had heart transplants, but I've never read anything like that.
Yeah. And Adina, I mean, she was so fiercely funny. And I think that comes through in her writing too. And that's part of, I think, macabre feeling, you know, is that there's this intensity and intense seriousness next to this, like, humor, you know, and the darkness and the light all juxtaposed together. And her doctor was joking with her. I mean, she brought that out in everybody in the most unlikely places. And when she wanted to bring her heart home, her doctor, she had this, like, very serious, very, like, you know, autistic heart surgeon, like, joking with her about how she should knit it into a sweater and, you know, all these, like, sweet things. She just had these, like, very sweet, she brought out sweetness, like, wherever she went, in really remarkable ways.
If there's one thing that you want people to take away from this beautiful, slender book, I might add, what would it be? Sirica, what would the one thing that you'd like to see people take from this book?
I think maybe just, like, some of my sister's generosity, just in, like, how much she gave of herself through her writing and in her living. And I think this book inspires the same, you know, for people to give to each other in radical ways, give of themselves in radical ways in a way that could transform everything and how people live. She really had that impact, I think, in her life, kind of a radical kind of kindness that she exuded.
Hannah, what would you like to see people take from Your Hearts, Your Scars?
Adina captures in a way that, like, I have never really seen before, you know, what it means to exist, the space between illness and wellness in a body that is different than everyone else's body, you know, that feeling of difference. And, you know, one of her favorite writers was James Baldwin, and a quote of his, you know, is at the start of the book, that I could do for others what I felt had not been done for me, you know, and if I could do that, if I could give, I could live. And I think that that's what Adina is doing in this book. She's giving to others with her words and
transform my sorrow into love and joy.
I want to thank both of you, Sarika Talvey-Goodman and Hannah Tinti. The book is called Your Hearts, Your Scars by Adina Talvey-Goodman. Where can people go to find out more about Adina and to find out more about the book?
You can go to her website, which is just her name, AdinaTalvey-Goodman.com. That has lots of information about Adina and about, there's actually, you can click through and read an excerpt from the book. So that's the main place to go and find out more.
Thank you so much, both of you, and thank you for what you've done for Adina. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. This one, by the way, friends, was our 1,200th show. Our guest next week will be Walter B. Levis, author of the new book, The Meaning of the Murder. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night. Services in Onig Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, and Kiddush in person and on our Facebook page. And join us at 2 p.m. today at the Unscrewed Theater on Speedway near Swan for a showing of Raiders of the Lost Ark. We'll tell you what's biblical fact as opposed to Hollywood film fantasy. Should be a lot of fun. Trivia contest, food, 2 o'clock there. Our playout this morning is from my favorite French klezmer Yiddish gypsy group in honor of Bastille Day tomorrow, Les Yeux Noirs, their version of Rozhenka's Mitmandlin. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, a bon week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.
Unas duvest. Wenn rei jedere sollst du nicht vergessen slidele rojinkes mit mandlen das wird sein dein baru jedere wird ahal samlen schlaf J'ai idée de schlof, Du nicht vergessen, Sliedele, Rosinkes mit Mandeln. Das wird sein dein Beruf.